transforming mental health culture in the higher education community. Understanding trends and changes through a new lens. April 2026. Published by the Ruderman Family Foundation and the Public Good Projects. Executive summary. Colleges are responding to growing student mental health needs and increasing demand for services, which is being driven by changing societal factors, greater public discourse around mental health, and reduced stigma. As campuses expand services, terminology and descriptions of supports vary widely across institutions. Across institutions, similar services are often labeled differently, while the same terms can refer to different types of support. This inconsistency makes it harder for students and families to understand available resources and for institutions to identify gaps or compare services across campuses. Currently, there is no shared framework for categorizing campus mental health services in a way that is both rigorous and easy to understand for students and their families. This white paper examines how service definitions and scope have evolved across U.S. institutions and proposes a conceptual model for organizing supports from wellness and prevention to acute care and recovery. Methods. This study drew from four sources to examine how mental health services are defined, organized, and publicly communicated by U.S. colleges and universities. First, an analysis of peer-reviewed and gray literature to identify existing conceptual frameworks, terminology, and models relevant to college mental health services. Second, a secondary analysis of the 2024 to 2025 Princeton Review and Ruderman Family Foundation Campus Mental Health Survey reports examining how U.S. colleges structure, deliver, and communicate mental health services and student awareness of resources. Third, a structured scoping review of public websites from 50 U.S. colleges and universities. Most schools included were highlighted in the 2026 Mental Health Services Honor Roll, with additional schools included to increase diversity across institution types. For example, historically black colleges and universities, gender-specific colleges, and neurodivergent serving institutions. Fourth, semi-structured interviews with 15 professionals working in U.S. college settings. Participants included clinicians, program leads, senior institutional leaders, and experts in college mental health. Interviews were conducted via Zoom and lasted around 45 minutes each. Key findings. Across interviews, survey data, and institutional materials, six major themes emerged in how campuses are expanding mental health services, organizing supports, and communicating about resources. Theme 1. Institutions are expanding prevention and redesigning services in response to evolving student needs. Institutions are increasingly expanding prevention and early intervention strategies to address increased student demand for counseling services. Offering lower intensity supports, such as skill building workshops and wellness programming, aims to address concerns earlier, reduce pressure on clinical services, and ensure that students with higher intensity needs can access appropriate care. Findings suggest that most institutions reviewed now take a multi-layered approach that combines broad wellness programs, brief and stepped care clinical models, and partnerships with telehealth vendors and community providers to expand access, manage demand, and more fully integrate mental health support into everyday campus life. Theme 2. Responsibility for student mental health is increasingly structured as a shared institutional function. Interviewees described a shift toward redistributing prevention, early identification, and relationship-based supports across many campus roles, such as faculty, advisors, residence life staff, coaches, and campus police. This redistribution is supported by training programs, embedded counselor models, and policies that formalize referral pathways and coordinated responses. Survey and interview data indicate that institutions are reinforcing this approach through leadership structures, cross-campus committees, and expanded peer support programs. These efforts integrate support throughout campus environments, help normalize help seeking, and enable earlier connection to appropriate resources. Theme 3. Campus mental health systems are evolving, but those changes are not always visible or straightforward for students. While higher education institutions increasingly use holistic frameworks to coordinate prevention, services, and cross-campus collaboration, these structural changes may not register with students, who often associate mental health support primarily with individual therapy. Consequently, students may default to counseling even when their challenges, such as financial strain, loneliness, or academic stress, might be addressed through other supports. To address this issue, many schools are creating multiple entry points, such as wellness hubs, online portals, screenings, triage consultations, and referrals from faculty or staff to facilitate connection to the best support, However, capacity to communicate these systems varies by institution, meaning that expanded services do not always translate into student awareness or effective use of available resources. Theme 4. The ways mental health services are labeled directly affect student access and engagement. Findings highlight a shift away from deficit-based terminology toward more inclusive, well-being-oriented language that frames mental health support as proactive and accessible. This helps normalize help-seeking and encourages earlier engagement with lower-intensity resources. However, institutional labels and service categories do not always align with how students understand their needs. Differences in terminology, particularly around crisis, urgent, and emergency services, can create confusion about where to seek help. Frequent renaming of programs or roles to reflect broader services or meet regulatory requirements also affects how easily students identify and navigate supports. Theme 5. Support and outreach are intensified around key moments of student need. Campuses reinforce awareness of available resources during moments such as orientation, midterms and finals, major disruptions, and reentry following a leave of absence, recognizing that students may be more receptive and in need of support at these times. Many institutions also begin communicating about mental health services during the admissions process, highlighting a growing interest from prospective students and families in campus well-being resources. These efforts are often paired with expanded outreach strategies such as screenings, stress relief programming, and year-round or referral-based services during academic breaks. Theme 6. Wellness frameworks provide a flexible structure for organizing and providing student support. Wellness-based frameworks have been widely used to organize and communicate campus mental health efforts. These frameworks are adaptable and often customized to reflect institutional priorities while emphasizing the interconnected nature of student well-being that extends beyond the counseling center. Wellness frameworks are useful for both student understanding and campus coordination. By providing shared language about different dimensions of well-being, these models help students recognize how challenges across areas of life affect mental health and encourage staff across departments to view student needs holistically, promoting more coordinated referrals and responses across campus. Introduction. Colleges and universities across the U.S. are responding to evolving student mental health needs amid rising demand and expanding approaches to care. Over the past few decades, stigma reduction efforts and growing public discourse about mental health have contributed to greater willingness among more students to seek support and talk openly about their well-being. Students are also arriving with more significant mental health histories and treatment backgrounds, and their presenting concerns are increasingly complex, often requiring specialized or higher levels of care that exceed what counseling centers are designed to provide. As institutions have expanded services in response to these shifts, the terminology used to discuss mental health and overall well-being has developed unevenly across higher education institutions. Similar services are often labeled differently across institutions, while identical terms may refer to substantively different types or intensities of support. This inconsistency complicates the ability of students and their families to understand available resources, limits institutions' capacity to assess coverage and identify gaps, and makes it more difficult to compare services or learn from practices across campuses. As Ryan Travia, Associate Vice President for Student Success at Babson College, observed, there's renewed energy around the idea that mental health is a community responsibility, not just the job of counseling services. A wide range of models and frameworks inform how colleges conceptualize student mental health and well-being, reflecting a growing emphasis on whole institution and systems-level approaches. The Okanagan Charter articulates a comprehensive vision for embedding health and well-being across campus culture, operations, and academic life, and has been formally adopted by a growing number of U.S. institutions. Building on this foundation, the 2025 Limerick Framework for Action extends the Okanagan Charter's principles by outlining how systems-level commitments can be operationalized through coordinated, student-centered mental health supports. Alongside these frameworks, institutions often draw on conceptually distinct but related approaches, including public health prevention models such as the GED Campus, the Thrive and Locus frameworks, which organize support based on level of need and intensity of care rather than diagnostic categories, service delivery strategies such as stepped care, triage and embedded counseling, and accreditation, designation, and quality improvement efforts led by organizations such as the International Accreditation of Counseling Services and the American College Health Association. Together, these efforts share a common emphasis on holistic well-being, prevention, and shared responsibility. However, they also vary in how they define services, organize supports, and apply principles in practice. Importantly, these frameworks are primarily designed to guide institutional strategy, coordination, and service design, rather than to provide a common, descriptive framework for categorizing supports across institutions. Despite substantial expansion in campus mental health and well-being efforts, there is no widely adopted framework for categorizing the specific types of support institutions provide in a consistent and analytically rigorous way. Existing approaches use inconsistent terminology and organize services in different ways, making it difficult for students and families to understand available options, for institutions to assess coverage and identify gaps, and for researchers to compare patterns across campuses. This white paper examines how definitions and service scopes have evolved across U.S. institutions and proposes a conceptual model for organizing supports from wellness and prevention to acute care and recovery. Synthesizing insights from multiple sources, this paper identifies patterns in how services are described and accessed and introduces a conceptual model designed to categorize mental health and well-being supports using a consistent service level framework that spans wellness and prevention through acute care and recovery. Traditional framing of college mental health support. This simplified continuum illustrates how college mental health and well-being support has historically been structured, with services spanning from well-being and prevention through clinical care and emergency response. In the past, clinical and crisis services have been the most visible and clearly defined, while prevention, early support, and well-being have been less consistently integrated or recognized as part of the mental health system. The traditional treatment-centered model can be described as a linear sequence. Prevention consisted of broad efforts focused on mental health stigma and awareness. Next, a student has a problem with the counseling center as the primary entry point. This was followed by early intervention, consisting of support groups and one-off mental health workshops. Next came targeted clinical support, meaning a therapy first response and psychiatric care. Finally, crisis care meant an emergency-only response with limited entry points. Two elements were often not included in formal mental health systems: flourishing, which was rarely included in formal mental health framing, and well-being, which was often associated with physical health or general wellness. As Jordan Perry, Director of Wellness and Prevention Services at Appalachian State University, put it, "We have made a shift to more environmental, community-level, and policy-level approaches. And we've shifted from a more pathogenic, disease-focused model to a more salutogenic health and well-being focused model. Those are the biggest changes I've seen over the last 15 to 20 years. Now, many institutions across the U.S. are shifting toward more comprehensive, prevention-oriented approaches that expand access points, support earlier engagement, and integrate mental health across campus environments." The conceptual model introduced in this paper builds on the traditional continuum by reframing these elements within a more interconnected system, moving from a single counseling-centered pathway to a network of entry points across campus settings, roles, and services. However, this transition remains ongoing and is not yet consistently reflected across all institutions. Methods. This white paper examines how definitions and service scopes have evolved across U.S. institutions and proposes a conceptual model for organizing supports from wellness and prevention to acute care and recovery. The approach combined literature review, structured analysis of institutional materials, secondary analysis of data on these issues, and qualitative interviews to triangulate findings. Literature review. Authors conducted a targeted review of peer-reviewed and gray literature published by public health, higher education, and mental health organizations to identify existing conceptual frameworks, terminology, and models relevant to college mental health services. Sources were selected based on their relevance to how services are organized and described on college campuses, including prevention frameworks, needs-based models, and systems-level approaches used in post-secondary settings. Data from campus mental health survey reports. This analysis draws on findings from the Princeton Review and the Ruderman Family Foundation campus mental health survey reports, published in 2024 and 2025. These national surveys collect self-reported information from U.S. colleges and universities about how mental health and well-being services are structured, delivered, and communicated on campus. The reports also include student-reported data on awareness of campus mental health resources. A secondary analysis of data from these reports was also conducted where possible. Results from the 2024 and 2025 surveys were compared to identify directional trends over time. Percentages were calculated based on the number of institutions that responded to each question. Survey data were used to provide a national context, identify emerging patterns, and triangulate themes observed in interviews and the scoping review. The 2024 survey and the 2025 survey are used to reference these data sources throughout this paper. Scoping review of institutional websites. To understand how mental health and well-being services are named, grouped, and presented to students and families, a structured scoping review of publicly available websites was conducted across 50 U.S. colleges and universities. While the campus mental health surveys provided broad, self-reported information about service structure, the website review enabled closer examination of how institutions publicly organize, label, and communicate supports in practice. The sample included all institutions recognized in the 2026 Mental Health Services Honor Roll and reflected variation in region, enrollment size, governance, both public and private, and resource context. Additional institutions that responded to the Campus Mental Health Survey but were not included in the 2026 Honor Roll were selected to broaden representation across institutional types. These included gender-specific colleges, a college specifically serving neurodivergent students, and historically Black colleges and universities. The review focused on publicly accessible materials, including service descriptions, program names, navigation pathways, and organizational structures. Using a structured codebook, authors documented how services were categorized, differentiated, and positioned within broader support systems. Coding constructs included support type, timing, delivery format, access pathway, population focus, and communication approach. Terminology identified through this review informed the development of the conceptual model, helping ensure that service categories reflected language commonly used in student and family-facing materials. Semi-structured qualitative interviews. To better understand how mental health services are organized and communicated in practice, semi-structured interviews were conducted with 15 professionals with experience working in college settings across the U.S. Interviewees were selected to represent a range of perspectives, including individuals in direct student-facing roles, such as clinicians and program leads, senior leaders responsible for institutional strategy and policy, and researchers with expertise in school-based mental health. This approach ensured representation from professionals who work directly with students, as well as those responsible for shaping institutional systems and policies. Interviews were conducted via video conferencing software, lasted an average of 38 minutes, and followed a semi-structured interview guide. All interviews were recorded and transcribed with participants' consent. Transcripts were analyzed using Deduce Qualitative Analysis software. Authors applied an iterative thematic analysis approach, initially drawing on the coding framework developed during the website review and refining codes as new themes emerged. Analytic memos were maintained throughout to document analytic decisions and reduce individual bias. Interview findings were used both to refine the model's categories and to confirm patterns identified through the literature review, national surveys, and website analysis. The interviews also provided practitioner insights into how campus mental health services are organized and communicated in practice. Model development. Findings from the literature review, campus mental health survey reports, website review, and qualitative interviews were compared to identify common patterns and differences in how institutions describe, organize, and communicate mental health and well-being supports. Based on these patterns, a conceptual framework was developed to organize the range of supports commonly present across campus mental health systems. The model was refined through multiple rounds of review to ensure it reflected real-world campus practices and the structures through which support is delivered across institutions. Particular attention was given to how services are grouped, how students typically enter support systems, and how different components, including service types, campus locations, staffing roles, and institutional policies, interact within the broader campus well-being ecosystem. Limitations. Several limitations should be considered when interpreting these findings. First, although the study incorporated multiple data sources, the qualitative interviews reflect the perspectives of campus professionals and are not intended to represent student experiences or be generalizable to all institutional contexts. Second, the interview sample did not include representatives from community colleges, historically Black colleges and universities, or gender-specific colleges, which may limit the applicability of the findings to those settings. Third, the analysis of institutional websites relied on publicly available information and may not fully capture informal practices, internal referral processes, or services that are intentionally communicated through non-public channels. Finally, this paper does not evaluate service quality, effectiveness, utilization, or student outcomes. The findings should therefore be interpreted as informing the structure, organization, and communication of campus mental health systems rather than their impact. Findings. Our findings point to shifts in how colleges organize, deliver, and communicate their mental health and well-being services to students and faculty. Interviewees described growing institutional attention to student mental health following the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, alongside a gradual reduction in stigma that has contributed to greater openness around help seeking and discussion of mental health across campuses. Within this context, interviewees described ongoing efforts by college mental health and well-being departments to reassess and update institutional approaches to supporting student well-being. Participants highlighted frameworks such as the Limerick Framework for Action and the Okanagan Charter as examples of efforts to align institutional strategies with the range of challenges students face. Across interviews, survey data, and institutional materials, several common patterns emerged in how campuses are expanding services, organizing supports, and communicating about mental health resources. These patterns are summarized in the 6 themes below. Theme 1. Institutions are expanding prevention and redesigning services in response to evolving student needs. Interviewees described the expansion of prevention efforts as a practical response to sustained increases in student utilization, particularly within counseling services. Rising demand, especially since the COVID-19 pandemic, has placed many counseling centers under pressure, prompting institutions to develop preventive and non-clinical supports that reduce bottlenecks, balance clinician caseloads, and improve access for students who require higher intensity care. By offering earlier and lower intensity interventions, campuses aim to address concerns before they escalate and to better match student needs with the most appropriate level of support. Examples include skill-building workshops that help students manage stress or anxiety, as well as practical resources that address common sources of student strain. Interviewees emphasize that some stressors, such as financial pressure related to tuition or housing, may be best addressed through resources like financial aid advising or emergency economic assistance rather than clinical counseling. As Dr. Cody Walls, Director of Counseling and Psychological Services at Indiana University Bloomington, explained, sometimes what a student really needs is a developmental intervention, like a workshop on building relationships, not individual psychotherapy. It's like asking whether you need a surgeon to remove a splinter. Probably not. According to the 2025 survey, nearly all reporting schools, 99%, indicated that they offer a comprehensive wellness program that makes counseling, referral, and well-being services available to all students. Interviewees described this broad access as a foundational principle, with core services designed to be widely available and additional supports tailored to specific student populations. Survey data show that many institutions train clinicians to work with diverse student backgrounds and experiences, including racial or ethnic minority students at 93%, LGBTQIA+ students at 93%, neurodivergent students at 92%, students living with substance use disorders at 91%, and those experiencing eating concerns at 87%. In addition to expanding formal services, campuses have introduced a range of informal engagement opportunities that promote connection, build coping skills, and support student well-being in non-clinical settings. According to the 2025 survey, institutions reported offering programs such as pet therapy events, sip and paint nights, and fresh check wellness days, as well as 4 credit courses like Adulting 101 that teach practical coping and life skills. These activities are intentionally framed as approachable campus experiences rather than clinical services, creating opportunities for students to build skills, reduce stress, and connect with support in low-pressure environments. By integrating these programs into everyday campus life, institutions aim to engage students earlier and introduce mental health resources in ways that feel accessible and non-stigmatizing. Institutions are expanding prevention to meet evolving student needs in 3 main ways. First, wellness education and skill building. Programs that help develop skills and manage stress, including workshops on coping skills, stress and anxiety management, and life skills, such as Adulting 101. Second, informal, low-pressure engagement. Activities that create approachable entry points to support and reduce stigma, like pet therapy, sip and paint nights, and other everyday wellness programming. Third, support for everyday stressors. Resources that address common non-clinical sources of distress, such as basic needs like food, housing, and finances. As one counselor noted, things like temporary support for housing or groceries feel very wellness-oriented to me, and it's clearly connected to mental health. You can't be mentally healthy if you're starving or homeless. So, there's been continued development of resources that support many areas of wellness. This broader prevention-oriented approach was also seen in survey data. In the 2025 survey, 44% of reporting institutions identified as a GED campus, meaning they participate in a multi-year initiative designed to strengthen prevention, early identification, and coordination across campus mental health services. Interviewees also referenced campus-wide frameworks such as the Okanagan Charter and the Healthy Campus Framework as tools for moving beyond a therapy-first model. Many institutions reported implementing stepped care or triage systems that match students to different levels of support based on their needs. Clinical service delivery is also evolving. Institutions increasingly rely on short-term or brief therapy models to expand access. These approaches focus on a specific concern or goal and typically involve a limited number of sessions or longer intervals between sessions, for example, biweekly rather than weekly. In some cases, these take the form of brief drop-in consultations offered in multiple locations across campus, often called Let's Talk or Let's Chat sessions. When available and accessible, students who require more intensive, longer-term, or higher-frequency care are often referred to group services, community providers, or telehealth partners. This shift reflects a practical trade-off, using brief individual therapy and on-campus groups to preserve counseling center capacity while relying on referrals and third-party partnerships for ongoing or specialized care. In addition, institutions increasingly emphasize skill-building workshops, support groups, and group counseling as complementary forms of support that can meet certain student needs while preserving capacity for individual counseling. As Pacific Lutheran University noted in the 2025 survey, the telehealth program helps us meet the diversity, equity, and inclusion priorities by ensuring students have access to providers, mental health, and health who share their identities. Digital platforms are also increasingly used to deliver services. In the 2025 survey, 92% of reporting schools indicated that mental health services were available either in person or through telehealth. These offerings include live services such as teletherapy and virtual support groups, as well as asynchronous options like peer support chat forums or secure messaging with a provider. In some cases, digital platforms are also used to facilitate crisis support, either through urgent telehealth appointments or by directing students to external crisis resources such as the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Interview participants noted that this flexibility helps institutions manage demand, accommodate students' schedules and geographic locations, and maintain continuity of care during academic breaks or other disruptions. Many institutions now rely on partnerships with third-party telehealth vendors and community-based providers as a central component of their strategy. According to the 2025 survey, 96% of reporting schools indicated that they refer students to off-campus counseling services. Survey data also showed that the average wait time to see a counselor during the 2023 to 2024 academic year was 4.2 days, although some institutions reported waits of up to 24 days. This variation in access reflects differences in institutional capacity and helps explain the growing reliance on external partnerships to expand availability. Interviewees described these partnerships as a way to reduce wait times, increase session availability, limit after-hours and on-call demands that contribute to clinician burnout, and provide students with access to more intensive or specialized services that their institutions may not be able to offer internally. At the same time, participants noted that expanded reliance on external providers introduces new challenges, including the need to clearly distinguish campus-based services from contracted care and the limited ability of institutions to monitor the quality and continuity of treatment. Theme 2. Responsibility for student mental health is increasingly structured as a shared institutional function. As institutions expand prevention efforts and redesign clinical services, interviewees described a related shift in how responsibility for student mental health is understood across campus. Rather than being viewed solely as the responsibility of counseling centers, supporting student well-being is increasingly seen as a shared responsibility across many campus roles. Faculty, coaches, advisors, campus police, residence life staff, and administrators were described as playing active roles in recognizing signs of distress, fostering a sense of belonging, and connecting students to appropriate resources. Interviewees emphasize that this reflects a broader shift from crisis-only involvement toward prevention, early support, and relationship building. At some institutions, campus police departments that were once primarily involved in emergency response now engage students through proactive community-building initiatives designed to build familiarity and trust. For example, one interviewee described how their campus police department regularly brings emotional support animals to campus spaces, providing students with opportunities for stress relief and informal interaction. As Laura Lewis, Assistant Director of the Suicide Prevention Program at The Ohio State University, described it, "A culture of care means creating an environment where people know they matter, where it's okay to ask for help, and where support is welcoming and non-judgmental. Everyone has a role to play." Survey data further illustrate this broader distribution of support. According to the 2025 survey, 93% of reporting schools indicated providing wellness support within residential programs, up from 79% in the 2024 survey. By integrating mental health resources into residential life, institutions place support within students' everyday living environments, reinforcing that mental health and well-being are addressed beyond traditional clinical settings. Survey responses and interview data also highlighted embedded counselor models as one way institutions distribute mental health support across campus. In these models, clinicians work directly within specific communities, such as athletics programs, academic departments, or cultural and identity-based resource centers. Locating services within familiar environments can increase visibility, reduce stigma, and encourage earlier engagement with support. Interviewees also noted that embedded counselors often develop a deeper understanding of the specific stressors and cultural dynamics within the communities they serve. Qualitative responses from the 2025 survey indicated that many institutions view embedded models as improving accessibility and responsiveness, while others are in the process of expanding these approaches. As Dr. Addie Wyman, director of the Counseling Center at Brandeis University, observed, embedded therapists work well because they understand the culture of specific sub-communities. At Harvard, embedded counselors in athletics were incredibly effective because they understood the nuances of that environment, coaches, recruitment, publicity. Institutional policies also help formalize responsibility for student mental health across campus. Policies requiring suicide prevention training, non-discrimination protections, academic flexibility, medical leave and re-entry procedures, and coordinated emergency response protocols clarify referral pathways, strengthen coordination across departments, and expand the number of campus roles equipped to respond when students experience distress. However, interviewees noted that many faculty members go beyond these formal expectations. Faculty were described as increasingly taking an active role in supporting student well-being, including participating in mental health task forces, incorporating counseling center information into course syllabi, initiating referrals, and, in some cases, personally accompanying students to services. Several interviewees reported that referrals from faculty and staff have increased in recent years, particularly following the COVID-19 pandemic, which they described as a catalyst for broader campus engagement in student mental health. Interviewees also observed greater faculty participation in training and outreach efforts. As Dr. Jamie Davidson, Associate Vice President for Student Wellness at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, put it, "Since the pandemic, faculty and staff are far more engaged and supportive. Referrals from them have doubled, and they're more likely to walk students to our offices rather than just telling them where to go." This shift towards shared responsibility is also reflected in how institutions organize leadership and coordination around student mental health. According to the 2025 survey, 73% of reporting schools indicated that they have a mental health task force, committee office, or designated coordinator responsible for guiding campus mental health efforts. Survey responses also showed an 8 percentage point increase from 2024 to 2025 in schools reporting a chief wellness or behavioral health officer role. Interviewees similarly described recent restructuring within mental health and wellness departments, including the creation of senior leadership positions such as vice presidents of well-being. These roles were described as helping coordinate efforts across departments and ensuring that responsibility for student well-being is shared across campus units rather than concentrated solely within counseling services. Many institutions also reported establishing cross-campus committees that bring together administrators, clinicians, faculty, and students to align priorities, coordinate initiatives, and support a more integrated institutional response to student mental health. Interviewees also describe student involvement as an increasingly visible component of this distributed model of responsibility. Participants noted that students are playing a more active role in shaping campus mental health efforts by serving on advisory committees, contributing to wellness leadership groups, and participating in focus groups that provide input on outreach materials, language, and program design. In some cases, interviewees reported that students themselves initiate or lead wellness-related initiatives that influence institutional priorities. In particular, peer support was described as an area that has received renewed focus and expansion in recent years. Schools reporting peer-to-peer programs increased from 63% in the 2024 survey to 73% in 2025. Interviewees noted that students are often more likely to turn to friends before seeking formal services, positioning peers as an important source of early and informal support and as a key channel for raising awareness of available resources. They also describe peer-led initiatives as helping make support feel more approachable, normalizing, help-seeking, and reaching students who may be hesitant to engage with counseling or other professional services. Peer mentoring programs and student groups were frequently cited as providing connection and shared experience without being explicitly framed as mental health services. As Matt Galloway, student care manager at University of Arizona Global Campus, described, "Our CHAMPS program is our peer mentoring program. It's a peer-to-peer network supported by student success coordinators and staff. It's a great space for students to connect with others who have navigated life events and academics and leverage peer support." Several interviewees described suicide prevention efforts as an important driver of this broader distribution of responsibility. Institutions increasingly train faculty, staff, and students to recognize warning signs and respond appropriately, reinforcing the expectation that early identification and referral can occur across many campus roles rather than solely within counseling services. Survey data reflect this trend. The most commonly offered trainings in the 2025 survey were QPR, which stands for Question, Persuade, and Refer, and Mental Health First Aid, both of which equip non-clinicians to recognize distress and initiate supportive conversations. Theme 3. Campus mental health systems are evolving, but those changes are not always visible or straightforward for students. Our findings revealed a gap between how institutions organize mental health systems and how students recognize and seek support. All of the frameworks identified in the literature are primarily designed for institutional leaders, practitioners, and system planners. These models guide coordination, prevention strategies, and service integration across campus units, but are not intended to function as student-facing navigation tools. Interviewees emphasize that although campuses increasingly rely on holistic frameworks internally, these structures are largely invisible to students by design. As Dr. Aaron Jeffrey, Director of Counseling and Psychological Services at Weber State University, noted, "Scope of practice is also important. Students need to understand what situations can be addressed in a university counseling center and those needing higher levels of care available elsewhere." As a result, even as institutions broaden services and expand prevention efforts, students often continue to associate mental health primarily with counseling or therapy. Interviewees noted that many non-clinical supports, such as academic assistance, financial aid, basic needs services, and wellness programming, are integrated into institutional well-being strategies, but are not consistently recognized by students as part of a broader mental health system. This disconnect can lead students to default to counseling even when the most relevant solution lies elsewhere. For example, a student experiencing stress related to food insecurity or housing instability may need emergency funding or basic needs support. When those services are not clearly visible within the broader ecosystem of student support, students may struggle to reach the resources most likely to resolve the source of their stress. This disconnect also reflects differences in how students experience and interpret their needs. Interviewees describe student help seeking as typically driven by immediate, concrete concerns such as academic stress, housing instability, financial strain, or interpersonal conflict. Rather than approaching campus support by trying to understand how services are organized or how institutional systems are designed, students generally seek help in response to pressing problems, often without precise language to describe what they are experiencing. Interviewees noted that when mental health services are introduced during orientation, the information may not be especially salient because students are typically focused on immediate priorities such as academics, housing, and building social connections as they transition to campus life. Students' experience of support depends not only on the range of services available, but also on how clearly they can identify where to begin and understand what happens next. Interviewees described institutions as increasingly creating multiple access points into support, including centralized wellness hubs, online resource portals, screenings, triage or consultation appointments, case management teams, referrals from faculty or staff, embedded providers, and crisis or emergency lines, rather than relying solely on students to schedule an appointment with the counseling center. These entry points are designed to help students know where to start, reduce barriers to connection, and ensure that counseling centers are not the only gateway to care. Interviewees emphasize that these pathways are especially important because many students experience challenges best addressed by other forms of support, reserving intensive clinical services for those with more urgent or complex needs. Some campuses are using tools such as red folder guides or similar quick reference materials to help faculty and staff recognize signs of distress and connect students to appropriate support. Clear entry points and referral routes can help students connect more quickly to the most relevant office, such as basic needs, services, or financial aid, rather than defaulting to therapy. They also help reduce the burden on students who require urgent or higher levels of care, as navigating multiple offices and repeatedly explaining their situation can delay support and add additional stress. Our findings also indicate that institutions vary in their ability to clearly communicate mental health systems to students. While many campuses have broadened their strategies and services, interviewees noted that institutional resources shape how effectively those changes are described and promoted. Participants from institutions with dedicated communications teams and coordinated outreach strategies reported greater capacity to explain evolving services in clear, student-centered language. In contrast, interviewees from campuses operating with more limited staffing or smaller budgets described greater difficulty maintaining consistent communication about available supports. As a result, structural changes to campus mental health systems do not always translate into student awareness or understanding, and students at different institutions may have varying levels of familiarity with available resources even when comparable services exist. As Jordan Perry, Director of Wellness and Prevention Services at Appalachian State University, observed, their concerns and needs don't always align with the information we're sharing. What we really need to do, and I'm not sure we do this particularly well, is make sure information is easy to find when students actually go looking for it. Theme 4, the ways mental health services are labeled directly affect student access and engagement. Interviewees consistently describe language as a central factor in whether students recognize available supports, understand their relevance, and choose to seek help. The terms used to describe mental health resources shape students' perceptions of who services are for, what they offer, and whether engaging with them feels appropriate or stigmatizing. As one counselor explained, for example, students might think, I don't need mental health support, but feel comfortable going to the wellness center because it doesn't feel like it's about their mental health. Our findings are consistent with recent societal trends indicating a broader shift toward more inclusive, empowering, and solution-oriented language in describing mental health. Many interviewees reported moving away from deficit-based terminology, which frames mental health challenges primarily as illnesses or problems to be fixed. Instead, institutions are increasingly framing support as something students can engage with proactively to strengthen well-being. Interviewees suggested that this approach helps normalize help-seeking and encourages earlier engagement with self-guided resources and lower-intensity supports, such as mental health workshops and peer support groups. Additionally, terms like neurodivergent are increasingly being used by students, schools, and society to describe people who have been diagnosed with certain characteristics or diagnoses, such as autism or dyslexia. As Dr. Natalie Hernandez, Senior Director of Counseling and Psychological Services at Pennsylvania State University, noted, I don't hear many students saying, I feel like I'm thriving. When students hear terms like flourish or thrive, it can feel almost tone deaf to them. Additionally, interviewees noted that the institutional categories used to organize mental health services do not always align with how students recognize their needs or seek help. Students do not typically distinguish between formal categories such as prevention, outreach, and intervention, and institutional or technical labeling of programs, roles, or service levels may not match how students interpret their needs or where they should seek help. Confusion is particularly pronounced around crisis services, where definitions of crisis, urgent, and emergency vary across campuses and may not align with students' understanding of immediate need. This can cause students in crisis to engage with low-intensity support, delaying their access to care. Many institutions are also renaming counseling centers or restructuring unit titles to better reflect the range of services they provide. For example, one campus replaced the title Counseling Center with Mental Health Services to signal that its offerings extend beyond individual therapy to include workshops, support groups, medication management, and crisis response. Some schools have also begun reserving the term counselor for licensed clinicians while renaming non-clinical roles, such as academic or career counselors, as advisors or coaches, in order to reduce ambiguity. Interviewees noted, however, that institutional policies and external regulatory environments can influence how services and roles are labeled. Requirements related to funding, compliance, or professional credentialing may shape how programs are named and organized. As a result, campuses sometimes rename or restructure services to align with evolving federal or state guidance. While these adjustments help institutions remain compliant, interviewees observed that frequent changes in naming or organizational structure have also affected how easily students recognize and locate available supports. As Dr. Cody Walls, Director of Counseling and Psychological Services at Indiana University Bloomington, explained, "Even now, we ask people not to say, 'You need to see a therapist,' but instead, 'Let's see how CAPS can help you.' Otherwise, students anchor on individual therapy and expectations get misaligned." Examples of how institutions have adjusted labels include renaming centers, for instance, changing counseling center to mental health services, and clarifying roles, for instance, changing academic counselor to academic advisor or academic coach. Theme 5, support and outreach are intensified around key moments of student need. Periods of heightened stress and key transitions are used by institutions as strategic opportunities to reinforce awareness of mental health support. Rather than introducing services only once, campuses often revisit and highlight available resources at moments when students may be more receptive or more likely to need assistance. These efforts may occur during major transitions, such as the period leading up to graduation, during predictable academic stress points like midterms and finals, following disruptions such as natural disasters or campus crises, or when a student takes a leave of absence. As Dr. Addie Wyman, director of the Counseling Center at Brandeis University, noted, high school counselors are starting to ask college counseling directors to help prepare juniors and seniors for the mental health challenges of college. Mental health readiness is becoming part of college readiness. Interviewees also noted that communication about mental health increasingly begins before students arrive on campus. Several participants described a growing trend in which prospective students and their families consider the availability of mental health support when deciding whether to enroll at a particular institution. As a result, many campuses now discuss mental health services during the admissions process through open houses, presentations at high schools, and informational materials shared with prospective students and families. Once students enroll, orientation typically serves as the first formal introduction to campus mental health resources. According to the 2025 survey, 52% of reporting schools required first-year students to participate in orientation sessions that included information about mental health services, and 39% required similar sessions for transfer students. Recognizing that orientation often involves a high volume of information, institutions reported supplementing these sessions with follow-up outreach, screenings, and proactive contact with students who disclose prior mental health histories. Institutions also intensify outreach during predictable periods of academic stress. Interviewees noted that campuses have increased mental health programming around midterms and finals by offering rapid access appointments, workshops, and stress relief events. Responses from the 2025 survey indicate that other campus units, including academic departments and residential life staff, frequently request mental health presentations during these periods in recognition of heightened student stress. A few institutions also incorporate formal wellness screenings into their outreach strategies. In the 2025 survey, 17% of schools reported conducting screenings every 9 to 12 months, while others align screening efforts with national awareness initiatives such as Mental Health Awareness Week or Mental Health Awareness Day. Support also extends to moments of disruption and reentry. Following distressing campus or community events, such as natural disasters, institutions often communicate with students through university-wide messages that highlight support services and mental health resources. Many schools also allow students to take a leave of absence during periods of significant personal difficulty. Rather than leaving students to navigate this process independently, institutions are increasingly implementing formal return from leave support structures. The percentage of schools reporting formal return from leave support increased from 48% in the 2024 survey to 61% in the 2025 survey. This progress reflects years of advocacy and knowledge sharing across the field. Researchers and practitioners have elevated leave of absence frameworks through national conferences and direct collaboration with institutions. Direct work with schools has spanned from large universities like Stanford University and The Ohio State University to smaller schools like the University of Alaska and Rowan University, helping campuses of all sizes develop more consistent and compassionate approaches. These supports often include wellness, care, and success planning to help ensure students receive appropriate accommodations, maintain regular contact with student support staff members, and continue receiving care if needed. Some institutions also offer policies such as tuition reimbursement, which can help reduce financial stress during these periods. Yet, as resources fluctuate year to year and fiscal pressures mount, the personnel and services that sustain these policies are increasingly vulnerable, underscoring the need for sustained institutional commitment rather than just formal policy adoption. As Fairfield University noted in the 2025 survey, it is standard procedure for a counseling center clinician to meet with students seeking to return to school following medical leave. Students review mental health progress, discuss ongoing treatment if applicable, and identify an academic and wellness success plan, including coping skills and campus resources. Institutions also emphasize the importance of maintaining continuity of support across academic breaks. Even when in-house services are unavailable, institutional websites typically direct students to local or national crisis resources. Together, these patterns suggest that institutions are not only organizing support by level of care, but are also aligning the availability and communication of services with key transitions, stress points, and disruptions in the academic calendar. Notably, 64% of schools offered year-round counseling in the 2025 survey, an increase of 8 percentage points from 2024. Theme 6, wellness frameworks provide a flexible structure for organizing and providing student support. Our findings indicate that wellness-based frameworks have emerged as one of the most widely recognized approaches for organizing campus mental health and well-being efforts. Many institutions reported drawing on wellness models to structure how services are organized and communicated, helping campuses present student support as a broad, interconnected system rather than as counseling alone. These frameworks are often used to highlight the multiple dimensions that contribute to student well-being and to emphasize that support may come from many areas of campus life, including academic support, basic needs, resources, social connection, and physical health. As the University of North Carolina at Greensboro noted in the 2025 survey, Spartan Well-Being hosts comprehensive programming for well-being based on the 8 dimensions of wellness, including support groups, community building, skills building, drop-in spaces, mental health training, social media campaigns, and well-being coaching. Wellness frameworks are also valued for their adaptability. Across the 2024 and 2025 surveys, SAMHSA's 8 Dimensions of Wellness was the most frequently cited model used to organize resources and messaging about student well-being. However, institutions often tailor both the number and naming of dimensions to reflect local priorities and student populations. Some campuses organize services across 4 or 5 domains, while others expand to 10 or more. The scoping review identified examples where institutions added dimensions such as creative wellness, digital wellness, or cultural wellness. Even when the underlying concepts are similar, terminology may vary. For example, some institutions refer to social wellness, while others use interpersonal wellness to describe the importance of relationships and connection. Interviewees noted that this flexibility allows institutions to organize supports in ways that reflect the overlapping nature of student needs rather than forcing services into rigid categories. For instance, group counseling or peer support may relate to both emotional and social well-being, while crisis or emergency care may intersect with emotional and physical health. As the University of Nebraska-Lincoln noted in the 2025 survey, we offer optional self-check opportunities, including the well-being assessment. It encompasses 10 dimensions of well-being. Each of the dimensions of well-being features an individual set of questions. Scores within each dimension reflect your level of well-being within that dimension, with a higher score indicating better well-being. For reference, SAMHSA's 8 Dimensions of Wellness, as reproduced from University of California Davis Student Health and Counseling Services, are emotional, occupational, intellectual, environmental, financial, social, physical, and spiritual. Wellness frameworks were also described as practical tools for promoting a holistic understanding of student well-being. Interviewees explain that these models help students recognize the importance of balance across different areas of life and how challenges in one domain can affect others. Several participants describe using wellness dimensions in a needs-based way, encouraging students to view each dimension as representing a set of needs that must be met to support overall well-being. For example, When a student's environmental needs are not met due to an unsafe or unstable living situation, their physical well-being may suffer if they are unable to get adequate rest. Interviewees also noted that wellness frameworks remain relevant over time because the core dimensions of human well-being tend to remain consistent, even as other factors in a person's life may change. While certain needs may become more prominent during different life stages or circumstances, people will always experience interconnected needs that influence their overall mental health. Some institutions support this approach by helping students develop wellness action plans that encourage reflection on personal strengths and areas where additional support may be needed across different domains. In addition to supporting student understanding, interviewees described wellness frameworks as helping facilitate coordination across campus departments. These models help staff see how their roles contribute to students' overall well-being, rather than viewing student concerns solely through the lens of their specific office or professional role. One interviewee noted that wellness frameworks encourage staff to zoom out and consider the student as a whole person whose well-being is shaped by multiple interconnected dimensions. By providing shared language across departments, these frameworks can help shift conversations beyond individual therapy as the primary response to mental health concerns and encourage staff members to make referrals to other resources that may better address a student's needs. As Dr. Jamie Davidson, Associate Vice President for Student Wellness at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, described it, the wellness wheel, is a great way to help students, faculty, staff, and professionals see students holistically. It reinforces that someone might be excelling academically but struggling emotionally. It also helps professionals step outside their disciplinary silos and make appropriate referrals. The needs themselves don't really change over time, but stressors do. Interviewees also emphasize that wellness frameworks can be layered alongside other models used by institutions. For example, within a wellness dimension, such as emotional well-being, supports may span a range of service intensities, from self-guided resources and workshops to counseling, crisis response, or medication management. In this way, wellness frameworks do not replace existing models such as stepped care or prevention frameworks, but provide an additional structure that helps organize and communicate how different forms of support fit together. Discussion and recommendations. Colleges and universities are placing increasing emphasis on student mental health, investing in expanded services, focusing on prevention efforts, and pivoting toward comprehensive approaches to student well-being. Stigma reduction initiatives and the emphasis on prevention have expanded the range of services and supports available on many campuses. Our findings suggest that higher education institutions are not only adding new services, but also creating additional pathways for students to access support. However, these structural changes to institutional mental health approaches are not always visible or straightforward from a student or family perspective. Many continue to associate mental health primarily with individual or group counseling, even when institutions offer other forms of support, such as financial support, academic resources, or housing solutions. Therefore, non-clinical supports that institutions view as part of a broader well-being strategy are not always recognized or used by students. This study identified six themes that summarize how colleges across the U.S. are reshaping their approaches to student mental health and well-being. Together, these themes indicate a transition in the nature and type of response to student mental health needs, giving rise to a new meaning for how mental health support is viewed by institutions. Institutions appear to be responding to rising demand by expanding prevention strategies and redesigning clinical services so that individual therapy is no longer the default response to every concern. The growing emphasis on prevention has also gradually fostered openness to new forms of support, including services delivered through nonprofit and private sector partnerships focused on young adult mental health. Second, this transition has also allowed for resources and support to be redistributed across campuses. This fresh approach, in which responsibility for student mental health is increasingly supported across campus roles, is evident among a growing number of institutions. Faculty, residence life staff, peer leaders, and institutional leadership structures are playing more active roles in recognizing distress among students and other groups and connecting them to support across various departments and divisions on campus, as well as to off-campus support. This movement away from counseling center-centric models reflects the development of campus-wide systems of care embedded across multiple institutional functions. As institutions continue to add programs, partnerships, and entry points to mental health services, the challenge increasingly extends beyond ensuring that support exists. While campuses have expanded a range of services, accessing these new systems remains a challenge as they can be difficult for students and families to navigate. Multiple offices, overlapping programs, and inconsistent terminology can create uncertainty about which resource is most appropriate for a student's given need. Third, these processes have not always led to colleges' desired outcomes, as some tension persists across institutions. While institutions are creating more opportunities for students to access support, students do not always interpret these efforts as part of mental health or well-being support. As a result, available services are not always used as schools intend. Increasingly complex, overly coordinated systems can contribute to students' lack of awareness or confusion about available supports. Additionally, while institutions offer a variety of resources, they may lack clear language and tools for communicating how those resources fit together. Students tend to approach support based on their immediate needs, such as academic pressure, financial strain, or loneliness, rather than through the institutional frameworks used to organize services. This can prevent students from recognizing and using the full range of supports available through an institution's broader wellness approach. When services are not clearly aligned with students' lived experiences, students may default to the most visible option, which is often counseling, even when other resources may be more appropriate. These challenges underscore the importance of not only expanding services, but also organizing and communicating them in ways that are more intuitive, accessible, and responsive to how students actually seek support. Fourth, at times the language used to label services shapes whether students recognize supports as relevant to their needs. When prevention services are framed narrowly around mental health, students whose stress stems from concerns such as loneliness or financial instability may not perceive those resources as relevant entry points. Consistency across communications and definitions appears to be an important factor in implementing a comprehensive, wellness-based approach to mental health. Interviews revealed that emergency and crisis-based terminology remains a particular point of confusion among many students. Campus policymakers and professionals often use these terms to refer to severe situations, while students use them to describe periods of distress, such as feeling emotionally overwhelmed after a breakup or experiencing test anxiety. Alternatively, some students may not perceive their situations to be serious enough to warrant accessing these services. To address this challenge, some institutions have added clear definitions to distinguish emergency, crisis, and urgent services on their web pages. Institutions are also working to align support with different stages of the student experience. Colleges are increasingly aligning outreach and messaging with common stress points and transitional phases in the academic calendar, helping raise awareness of supports when students may be most likely to need or engage with them. Marketing and outreach efforts that embed schools' culture around mental health in the admissions process, and in some cases even earlier, suggest that mental health has become a growing priority in the higher education system in recent years. This pattern is reflected in our sixth and final theme, which highlights the use of wellness frameworks to organize support in more interconnected ways. Organizing services around broader dimensions of well-being, such as academic, social, physical, and emotional needs, frames mental health around recognizable areas of student life. Wellness models can help make the range of available resources more legible to students and families. This framing influences how mental health is acknowledged, understood, discussed, funded, and made available and visible across campuses. These frameworks are an important step toward shifting campus mental health culture and strengthening students' social and academic experience. A conceptual model for mental health and well-being on college campuses. A conceptual model for mental health and well-being on college campuses is an approach aimed at fostering resilience. It offers a foundation for organizing and communicating mental health and well-being efforts in ways that better align with how students experience stress and seek support. Colleges and universities are increasingly providing a range of resources and supports that can help students navigate challenges, build resilience, and thrive during and beyond their academic experience. Based on these findings, we propose a model that illustrates how mental health and well-being supports are implemented through a campus-wide well-being approach. It also shows how institutions describe, organize, and communicate different forms of support. The model is organized to illustrate how campus mental health and well-being systems are structured around students' areas of need. At the center of the model are student needs, surrounded by interconnected domains of support, delivery, access, and navigation, and institutional conditions that shape how support is provided. Resource and service delivery, including individual and group supports, the locations where support is encountered, and the staffing structures that support delivery, collectively enable navigation pathways that help students access appropriate care. All of these components are further shaped by institutional policies, which influence how support is delivered and experienced within the campus environment. The model has several components. The following summarizes each. Access and navigation. Long-standing access and navigation strategies include triage, intake, referral pathways, and crisis response services. Expanding or emerging supports include drop-in support, care teams or case management, and pathways to on- and off-campus services. Dedicated brokers of access and services. Long-standing support staff includes counselors, student health staff, advisors, tutors, student success or affairs staff, faculty, residence life, coaches, and other student-facing staff. Expanding or emerging supports include peer leaders, student ambassadors, faculty and staff trained on referral networks, well-being leadership roles, care or student support teams, embedded counselors, and case management roles. Gateways. Long-standing gateways include counseling, student health, and crisis response services. Expanding or emerging supports include recreation and residence life spaces, advising, tutoring, and career centers, more integrated student need-based offices, wellness or well-being centers, telehealth platforms, and community providers. Group services and shared supports. Long-standing group supports include student organizations, social activities, leadership programs, and group counseling. Expanding or emerging supports include peer support programs, social connection and belonging events, student and staff prevention and response trainings, well-being courses, skills groups, and psychoeducational workshops. Individual and tailored supports. Long-standing individual supports include career and academic tutoring, crisis support, individual counseling or therapy, and medication management. Expanding or emerging supports include well-being coaching, peer support, self-guided resources, brief consultations, rapid care, and specialized clinical services. Policies shaping institutional conditions, access, and support. Long-standing policies include those related to disability and accessibility accommodations, confidentiality, academic flexibility, anti-discrimination, and financial policies. Expanding or emerging policies include care coordination with telehealth and community providers, suicide and overdose prevention and response training, wellness check-ins, and trauma-informed and bias policies. The model highlights the relationship between student needs and the multiple campus systems through which support is delivered. It distinguishes between several expanding forms of support delivery commonly found across campus mental health systems, including group-based supports, individual or tailored services, the locations where support is encountered, and the people who promote and deliver support. Group-based supports include shared services delivered in collective settings, spanning the full continuum from prevention and promotion to higher-intensity clinical care. Among long-standing approaches, prevention and promotion efforts include student organizations and community groups, campus events, workshops and skill-building sessions, interfaith programs, social programming, volunteer or service opportunities, learning communities and seminars, and leadership development programs. Within this category, higher-intensity services include group counseling or therapy. More recently, institutions have expanded prevention and promotion offerings to include peer support programs, initiatives focused on social connection and belonging, student and staff training in suicide prevention and overdose response, four-credit well-being courses, and other peer or community-based activities. In the clinical domain, newer group-based services include skills groups, which are structured short-term sessions that teach practical, psychological, or behavioral strategies, and psychoeducational workshops. Individual and tailored supports refer to services delivered through one-to-one interaction or personalized guidance designed to address a specific student's needs. Among long-standing approaches, prevention and promotion supports include career coaching, academic tutoring, mentorship, and other forms of individualized guidance that help students navigate academic, personal, and developmental challenges. Within this category, higher-intensity individualized supports include crisis support, individual counseling or therapy, disability accommodations, and medication management. Institutions have also expanded a range of newer individualized supports. In prevention and promotion, these supports include well-being-focused coaching models, peer support approaches, self-guided digital or self-help resources, staff training designed to support specific student populations, and technology or equipment loan programs that facilitate access to well-being resources. In the clinical domain, newer approaches include brief consultation models, expanded urgent or crisis response options, for example, same-day or rapid access services, specialized clinical services, and more flexible pathways connecting students to telehealth or community-based providers. The model also highlights the importance of the settings where many forms of student support are delivered. Gateways reflect the settings in which group and individual supports are accessed. Traditionally, higher intensity clinical services were concentrated in centralized locations such as counseling centers and student health centers, which functioned as primary entry points for mental health care and crisis response. However, institutions are increasingly taking a cross-campus approach to promoting student well-being. In prevention and promotion, institutions more intentionally frame locations such as recreation centers, housing and residence life offices, identity-based cultural centers, academic support spaces, career services offices, faith or spiritual life centers, financial aid and basic needs offices, campus green or relaxation spaces, and telehealth platforms as part of the broader campus well-being ecosystem. By positioning these spaces alongside service types, the model highlights that students often encounter support through the environments where they study, live, and build community, reflecting a broader shift toward distributing mental health and well-being resources across campus rather than concentrating them solely within counseling centers. The role of mental health-related staff has also evolved as campuses adopt a broader well-being approach. In our model, this layer is defined as dedicated brokers of access and services and includes professionals and trained peer workers across campus service centers, departments, and divisions who are increasingly supporting students in recognizing challenges, navigating available resources, and coordinating care. In some cases, they also provide direct support to students. These roles are closely connected to support delivery, reflecting the dual function that staff and peer supporters often serve across campus. Some primarily guide students toward appropriate resources, while others deliver services directly through advising, mentoring, counseling, or case management. Among long-standing roles, prevention and promotion supports are delivered by professionals who regularly interact with students in academic and student affairs contexts. These include academic, career, financial aid, and spiritual advisors, academic tutors and student success staff, faculty advisors, residence life and student affairs staff, dedicated academic support staff, and athletic coaches. While these roles have long been part of campus support systems, institutions are increasingly engaging them more intentionally in student well-being efforts, expanding their capacity to recognize distress and connect students to appropriate resources. Within this same category, higher intensity clinical services have been delivered by counselors and student health center staff who provide mental health care and related clinical support. Institutions have also expanded staffing to include more recent or emerging roles designed to strengthen coordination and support access. In prevention and promotion, these roles include peer leaders, educators, or ambassadors, trained navigators, faculty and staff trained in referral pathways, campus police and safety personnel engaged in well-being initiatives, care or student support teams, and other staff positioned to connect students across campus services. In the clinical domain, newer roles include embedded counselors located within different locations and departments across campus, and case management teams that coordinate care across services. Many institutions are also establishing executive-level leadership positions dedicated to advancing student well-being, such as vice presidents of well-being. By positioning staff as both a point of access and a component of service delivery, the model highlights that campus mental health systems rely on the people who interact with students to help them identify concerns, connect to resources, and sustain support across the institution. Access and navigation are another foundational component of the model, reflecting the no-wrong-door approach increasingly adopted by institutions. Students can enter the support system through multiple pathways and be guided to appropriate resources based on their needs, reducing reliance on any single entry point such as counseling services. This framing emphasizes the importance of helping students navigate existing services more easily rather than relying solely on expanding offerings. It also includes more flexible and supported referral pathways to telehealth and community-based providers, ensuring that students can access appropriate care even when institutional capacity is limited. The model also recognizes that policies shape the institutional conditions that influence access to support and enable new approaches to student mental health and well-being. This layer encompasses all other components of the model to emphasize that policies establish the structural environment within which all other forms of support can exist and operate. Institutional policies influence how students access services, how campus offices coordinate care, and how resources are communicated and delivered across the institution. Among long-standing institutional conditions, some policies are directly related to mental health, including those governing disability and accessibility accommodations, privacy and confidentiality protections, academic flexibility, and leave of absence and return procedures. These policies establish core conditions that shape whether and how students can seek and receive mental health support. At the same time, a broader set of institutional policies, now increasingly understood as part of a campus-wide well-being approach, also play a critical role. This includes tuition reimbursement or refund practices, anti-discrimination and harassment protections, campus safety and health regulations, financial aid and billing practices, housing and residential policies, and provisions for religious or cultural observance. Together, these policies influence the broader context in which students experience stress and access support, expanding the definition of well-being beyond traditional mental health services. Institutions have also introduced more recent or expanding policy approaches to improve coordination and access to mental health and well-being resources. These include referral and care coordination policies related to basic needs, services, and telehealth and community partners, regular wellness check-ins or screenings, suicide prevention and response training requirements, overdose prevention and response training, trauma-informed response procedures, bias response initiatives, wellness committees or task forces, orientation or onboarding expectations related to well-being, and institutional policies related to academic deadlines or other flexibility during periods of student distress. The model also surfaces an important and often under-examined dimension of institutional policy, the relationship between stated values and actual practice. Most colleges and universities articulate explicit commitments to student well-being, belonging, and equity in their mission statements, strategic plans, and public communications. Yet meaningful gaps can exist between these espoused values and the realities on campus. When institutions examine their mental health efforts through the lens of this model, those gaps often become visible. An institution may publicly champion equity and inclusion, for example, while maintaining financial aid or leave of absence policies that create barriers for students experiencing mental health crises. Taking the time to align policies with institutional values can lead to meaningful transformation that students can experience. Campus mental health systems are shaped by programs, services, staff roles, and the institutional policies and conditions that determine how support is coordinated, accessed, and sustained across campus environments. Together, these layers illustrate how student needs are connected to navigation pathways, service delivery, gateways, brokers, and institutional policies that collectively influence how mental health and well-being are addressed across campus. Looking ahead. As campus mental health systems continue to evolve, institutions may benefit from examining several emerging areas that could strengthen how systems function in practice. The areas below highlight promising directions for future work based on patterns observed across the study's data sources. Build on existing trust networks across campus. Students often first seek support from people they already know and trust, rather than from formal services. Peers, faculty, advisors, coaches, and residence life staff frequently serve as the first point of contact when students experience distress. As responsibility for student well-being becomes more distributed across campus roles, institutions may benefit from strengthening these networks by ensuring that the people students turn to first have clear, consistent information about available resources and referral pathways. Define when wellness framing helps and when specificity is needed. Many institutions have adopted wellness-oriented language to normalize help-seeking and connect mental health to a wider range of supports across campus life. This framing can make services feel more approachable and reduce the perception that support is only intended for students in crisis. However, institutions would benefit from considering how language choices function within their own campus context. The balance between wellness framing and more specific descriptions of services may vary depending on student populations, campus culture, and how mental health resources are organized and communicated. Ensure communication is clear and consistent to improve student access to support. Institutions with similar services often communicate about those resources in very different ways. The clarity, organization, and visibility of information about supports can influence whether students recognize available options and know where to begin. Clearer public-facing descriptions of services, entry points, and referral pathways can help ensure that expanded supports translate into expanded student access. Expand student involvement in shaping mental health systems. Students are often consulted through advisory groups or committees, but the reach of these efforts is often limited to students who are already highly engaged or familiar with mental health initiatives. Broadening student participation may help institutions better understand how support systems appear to students and where confusion or barriers arise. Institutions could consider incorporating feedback through a wider range of channels, such as campus surveys, listening sessions, open forums, user testing of websites and resource guides, or feedback collected through orientation, residence life programs, or course-based activities. Conclusion. Campus mental health systems are undergoing significant transformation. Institutions are moving beyond counseling center-centric models toward holistic campus-wide approaches that allocate responsibility for student well-being across many roles, settings, and service types. A wide swath of services is now part of the fabric of how institutions respond to student needs, not afterthoughts alongside individual therapy. Yet the gap between how institutions organize these systems and how students perceive and navigate them persists. Expanded services do not automatically translate into student awareness or effective use. Terminology that feels intuitive to administrators or providers can confuse or deter the students these systems are designed to serve. Further, structural changes that appear significant from an institutional perspective may be largely invisible to students focused on immediate concerns. The conceptual model introduced in this paper offers a shared framework for thinking about how campus mental health supports are organized, delivered, and communicated. By mapping the relationship between student needs, service delivery, navigation pathways, and institutional policy, it provides a template for clearer communication and more intentional coordination across institutions. As campuses continue to evolve their approaches, centering student experience will be essential to the success of these evolving systems. Appendix. Appendix A, Institutional Affiliations of Interview Participants. The following institutions represent the professional affiliations of staff members who participated in qualitative interviews for this study. Interviewees were selected based on their roles and expertise related to student mental health and well-being services. Interviews reflect individual professional perspectives informed by participants' roles and experiences and are not intended to represent student perspectives, institutional positions, or official views of the listed institutions. Inclusion in this appendix indicates affiliation at the time of the interview and does not imply institutional endorsement of the findings or model presented in this paper. The institutions are Appalachian State University, Babson College, Brandeis University, Coastal Carolina University, Johns Hopkins University, The Ohio State University, North Dakota State University, Pennsylvania State University, San Diego State University, Indiana University, Bloomington, University of Maine at Farmington, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, University of Arizona, and Weber State University.